Hello, everyone. It's the Bookcast. It's episode number 131. The Bookcast, it's a podcast about Nintendo stuff, and we're from Australia, so it's fairly Australia-specific, but not really.
I was hoping you're going to say it's a podcast about Vuk.
Well, I mean that could be our offshoot. Talk about him. We just have a Vukcast. Anyway.
We follow him around and go, he did this today.
Just a Vuk live stream. I'm Stephen. I'm the host guy, I guess, but I also have Daniel with me. Hello, Daniel.
Hi. I'm the interrupting one.
Yeah, it's kind of your thing. And Troy's here also as well. Hi, Troy.
Hi, I'm the token Troy.
Yes, we picked you out of all the Troys to come and join
us.
I'm
the best one. So
you're just the prototypical Troy.
Yeah.
It was like The Bachelor, but we had just Troys.
Just the Troy. You know.
And we gave, like, the one who would go away, like, we gave him, like, a Wiimote or something.
Oh, harsh. Not even a Remote Plus, is it?
No, God
no. We don't waste those, you know, Wii Motion Plus adapters on lesser Troys.
Plebeians.
Anyway, so, yeah, we talk about news. That's the first thing we're going to do. Well, to start with the week, there's been a whole bunch of fan games made around Nintendo stuff that just seem to have come out in the last fortnight or so, and then they've been pulled down as a result of action from Nintendo's lawyers in the last fortnight or so. So that's interesting. So we've had one that I've been following for years. I kind of forgot it existed, and then it just popped out of nowhere. Another Metroid 2 remake, or AM2R. It's a sort of full-on remake of Metroid 2, which was originally on the Game Boy. And, yeah, I've been looking forward to this for ages. Have you guys been following it as well?
Yeah, I heard about it a long time ago, and I just sort of, as you, forgot about it. But then I'm like, oh, okay, cool, that's out. I will get that.
Have any of you played it yet?
A little bit.
Nope.
What are your thoughts?
I mean, it really does feel like the Game Boy one, which I actually only played last year and finished.
Okay, so you'd actually played the original Metroid 2 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, Metroid 2 was my first Metroid game, so I'm like, I don't get why people don't like it, because I liked it at the time.
It's probably one of the least Metroid-feeling games out of the series. It's quite different.
More so than Metroid Prime Pinball?
You know what I mean. Out of the traditional Metroid games.
Yeah. I've mainly been looking forward to it just because I've tried to play Metroid 2 before and I just didn't really... I couldn't get into it at this point. It sort of feels a bit antiquated. I didn't want to sort of... Yeah, oh, so zoomed in, which is understandable because on a tiny screen you'd either have a Samus that you could barely see or a Samus that's so big that you can't see anything but Samus. There wasn't really a middle ground back then, I guess. But I don't know, I just didn't... I didn't find the drive to play it, like... Because it didn't... Did it have an in-game map?
Nope.
Yeah, I don't think... Yeah, I just couldn't deal with
that. I mean, to be fair, the original Metroid didn't have an in-game map either. That was all just drawn out in graph paper. But this game's a bit different because it doesn't really follow a proper... Like, I think in Metroid, the actual maps, like the way it's sort of all laid out works... what's the word I'm looking for? No areas would overlap.
Yeah.
And no areas would overlap. Whereas this, I think there is a little bit of overlapping in the way the areas sort of connect and all that. I think. I don't quite know that.
Know that I'd been sort of since the first Metroid, which another one that I haven't played much. I own it like five times, but I've never properly played the first one. I've been wanting a Zero Mission for Metroid 2 for a long time because I loved the heck out of Zero Mission. And it just took a game that I really, really liked the idea of and made it more approachable for me as someone who's not able to really go back and enjoy that kind of game anymore. And yes.
And it's also arguably one of the most, storyline-wise, the most important Metroid games. Like, this is the one where she meets up with the baby.
Yeah, literally it is the one where she gets the last Metroid in captivity and the galaxy becomes at peace. Like, yeah.
And, you know, there probably wasn't really much of a storyline lore to Metroid before Metroid 2. And it's probably the hardest one for people who didn't grow up on it to get into.
Yeah, totally. Sure. So, well, yeah, from...
I've lost my train of thought.
I kind of thought Nintendo was just going to let this one slide, because it'd been in development for so long, and they had chances to sort of... to stop it, but then... Yeah, it seems a bit of a dick move for them to wait for it to come out, for them to go, no, stop doing that.
Yeah, well,
but then on the same side, I'm like, well, it is their IP, so they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, they can, pretty much.
But on the other hand, apparently Nintendo of Japan, if you want to call it, have like outright said that they're cool with this sort of thing and they encourage it. Sort of level of fan creation.
Really?
Yeah.
That's curious.
And then Nintendo of America goes ahead and does this sort of thing. So it's kind of the left hand not talking to the right hand in terms of ideals.
Yeah, like
Are you saying the opposite sides of Nintendo don't talk to each other and coordinate releases strategically?
Are you sitting down? Because yes, I am saying that.
Yes. Oh. Next thing you'll say that like Nintendo Japan will spend millions of dollars making a huge epic RPG, and then Nintendo America to go, oh, whatever, we don't care about it.
I mean,
you can release it Europe.
I kind of like. I can see that there's a couple of sides to it, because like, I don't fully understand the whole intellectual property laws. So don't quote me. Don't come at me with this. But like. As far as I understand, like an IP that's not protected when it should be is kind of as good as one that's, you know, doesn't have a copyright or an IP copyright on it at all. Like if they sort of let everyone go and make their own Metroid game, then they don't really have any leg to stand on if they decide to stop any specific Metroid game.
Now, but at the I'm same, not a lawyer, yeah? But I think that sort of thinking applies to trademarks and not copyright. So he with trademark, if you right, don't yeah. protect your trademarks, you're effectively giving it up.
Yeah, I think that's probably what I was getting at, yes.
Yeah, whereas with copyright, it's more of a, if they're making a product that resembles the one that they have a patent on, then it's an issue. But they're not really selling a product. It's a fan game.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think it's interesting how it can be come at from multiple ways as well. I saw a really interesting comparison, just a quick like summary image on Twitter the other day of you've got Nintendo where they have people making a Metroid sort of fan tribute game, gets taken down. You get people making Sonic fan games and they get hired by Sega to make the new Sonic Mania. Like it's two ways of dealing with the same problem. One is like way better, or I guess it treats people much more, it's much more likable, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
I think that's just sort of the position Sega's in at the moment. You look at the official Sonic Twitter page. It's very amazing.
I'm not even a Sonic fan.
Yeah, it is, but it's very fan pandering. And I think they know, hey, look, we've got a dedicated fan base. Let's, you know, go with it, see what we can get out of them. And look, when you say this guys making Sonic Mania, is that the guys that did the Freedom Planet game?
No, I think it's the, or okay. I don't, they might be part of it, but I know one of the main programmers is Christian Whitehead, who, like, he was a big name in the sort of old Sonic fan game sort of scene years and years ago. And since then, he sort of created the, I'm trying to remember, I think it's just called the Retro Engine, but basically it's the engine that Sega have used to bring a lot of their Mega Drive games to sort of modern platforms like iOS and Android. And so it allows these games to actually render in widescreen, render in a higher resolution, but still be the same regular game. So it's a bit more than just emulation. So kind of showing Nintendo what I wish they would do with their emulation, but let's not go further into that one.
Does anyone remember another sort of Metroid game called Minitroid?
No.
Okay. Because that was another Metroid fan game that was being made a few years ago.
Does not ring a bell.
But I could send you pictures of it over the chat, but that won't help in an audio sort of presentation.
Everybody Google it.
Report I can see is from 2011, so yeah. Who knows?
I wonder what happened to that. The other sort of big, like there's been a few sort of big fan projects. Like there's also people doing localizations, like what happened with Mother 3. I mean, that sort of got allowed to exist.
Well, I think no with issue. That, I think they probably have that on a technicality because the translation, it's they're not distributing a ROM of Mother 3. They're distributing a patch that you can apply to your own completely legal version of Mother 3 that you extracted from your own cartridge, because that's what we all do. I guess, you know, that's why they wouldn't be able to take action even if they wanted to on that.
Can I ask a stupid question? Is it actually, is that possible to do? Like, if I had a bought a copy of Mother 3 while I was in Japan, I could have then somehow put the translation onto that cart and then...
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure, don't you have a Retron 5?
Why did I not... Yeah, but I mean, I would more want to play it on my Game Boy Micro.
Oh, probably less so on that. Like, from what I understand, the only patching I've ever done has been from ROM, like actual ROMs extracted and then put onto a flash cart, for example. But
okay, so I'm cool.
I guess you could feel more like you're doing the right thing if you bought the game and then put a ROM on a flash cart, but who knows? It's all...
I think the other thing to consider with this is it's a remake of Metroid 2, and Metroid 2 is a game that Nintendo still sells on the Nintendo 3DS eShop.
Yeah, it could be part of it. Like, they could argue that this is taking sales away, but I would also argue that it's a better game.
Tens of sales a month.
Yeah, I reckon.
I mean, seriously, Nintendo should have seen what this guy was doing and gone, hey, take it down, let's talk, and maybe we could work on releasing this on a digital thing. Like, it's Axiom Verge was a thing made by one guy, and Nintendo sort of had the chance to maybe get that guy to help them make a Metroid game, but they just weren't interested in it.
It's all the more disappointing that, like, the only thing Nintendo have really done for the 30th anniversary of Metroid is take down a fan game celebrating the 30th anniversary of Metroid. Like,
I mean, as if Federation Force needs any more reason for people to get angry about it.
Yeah.
Which, again, is a game that I'm kind of looking forward to, but not in a traditional Metroid way.
Not in, like, a holy shit, I can't wait to play this game way, and just more of a...
This looks interesting. Right way. Yeah.
Can I mean, the thing I sort of want to say of this, I mean, the guy, I know he wanted to make it as a tribute to Metroid, but he didn't have to make it a Metroid game to do that.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Like, you look at a lot of older, like back in sort of mid-80s when you had games like this that were very clearly rip-offs of existing games. They were usually, they sort of inserted their own characters and made their own like weird remixed genres of it rather than saying, here is a character that someone else owns, but I will make a game of it. Like, as much as I don't think this would have had anywhere near the impact it would have if it was not a Metroid 2 remake. You couldn't just... You know, it wouldn't be able to be a Metroid 2 remake, which is exactly what I've been wanting. But at the same time, it's kind of asking for trouble. Nintendo really have Japan, as Troy said, Nintendo of Japan have kind of said it's all good, but there's a big precedent of stuff like this getting cease and desist the day after it releases and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think everybody saw it coming.
Yeah.
I could have just seen, you know, this guy probably could have made some money out of it if stuff like... Zeo Drifter, or even, I mean, this looks as good as like an Axiom Verge or Guacamole. And I mean, if he had a sort of done his own thing and then, you know, got some press out about it beforehand, he maybe could have made some money off it. I mean, that sort of, I'm hoping maybe he did have alternate sprites so he could go, look, guys, I know I couldn't get my Metroid remake out, but here's something that's totally not the same game if you want to go buy it off Steam or whatever.
Yeah, but I feel like the other Metroid 2. It's one of those niche games that people either absolutely love or they hate. And I think this is just an attempt to get it into more people's, like, knowledge, I guess, and make it a bit easier to play.
The other thing, though, the other remake.
Yes, there is another remake to talk about. You should talk about it.
I don't know anything about it.
Well, I guess I'll take the reins here. So Pokemon Uranium, which is a weird name, but sure, came out on the 6th of August, from what I understand, when it's been similar to AM2R. It's a fan game that's been in the making for 9 years, from what I've been reading. And it's sort of very much rooted in the Game Boy Advance Pokemon games. It's got a very, very similar visual style. All the, like, in-game text is basically exactly the same as a GBA game. And it's set in the fictional, I guess they're all fictional, but the unofficial Tandor region. And it's apparently it has a whole bunch of Pokemon that have been mutated by a sort of a nuclear accident, and they've started going a bit bothersome and attacking people and just being bad Pokemon.
Bothersome.
And yes. And so you're sort of, as well as doing the whole, you know, I'm going to be the best and get all the badges and do the Pokemon League. As well as that, you're sort of helping out by battling and stopping these kind of radiated Pokemon from being bothersome. So, and yeah, and I mean,
I've just got like an image of like a two-headed Pikachu that's just survived a Chernobyl-like event. It's like cute.
It's just a Doduo mixed with Pikachu.
Oh, what is that?
I mean, well, the idea of kind of man-manipulated Pokemon isn't really new, but having it via nuclear is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool idea, and clearly, you know, it's been going for, well, been in development for 9 years for people who aren't being paid anything for it and didn't ask any money for it. So it's, I mean, it's kind of admirable in that way, but at the same time, like, sort of looking through trailers and a little bit of gameplay, it looks like it just sort of rips a lot of stuff directly from the games, or if not, it's heavily, heavily inspired. And like, even the music sounds like not direct rips, but sort of a rearrangement of existing songs, like the, you know, really sort of championship Pokemon music that you hear at Pokemon League and stuff is sort of fairly heavily featured in the trailers. And I don't know, once again, it just kind of seems like something that is just asking for a lawyer to say, hey, what's going on?
Yeah, but how many downloads did this get? And
apparently, 1.5 million before it got taken down.
Which is crazy.
It's ridiculous, yeah. Like, and that was over, let's see, apparently got pulled down on the 14th of August, so just under a week, or just over a week. Like, 1.5 million. Crazy.
Like, granted, it was free, but still, yeah. 1.5 million people wanted to try this.
Like, there are a lot of, like, free mobile games that don't hit that, but, you know, obviously this had the Pokemon name, which they don't own, which is why it doesn't exist anymore. But yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. I
mean, and given how hot Pokemon is right now, because Pokemon Go
absolutely
and all of that.
So yeah, it's, I don't know how to feel about these fan games. You can tell a lot of work's gone into them, and you kind of want to say, yeah, good job. But at the same time, I don't know, it's just asking for trouble. It's never worked out well.
I'm kind of more cool with the Metroid one than the Pokemon one, because I just...
Yeah.
I mean...
I guess with Metroid, it's a little bit like we haven't had a quote-unquote real Metroid for so long.
Yeah.
Whereas with Pokemon, you pretty much have one every year ever since 9 years ago almost. So you can kind of, you know, there's not exactly pent-up demand for it. It's just more of a fan passion project, but...
I mean, it didn't need to be Pokemon, yeah, though, I think.
Well, I guess, you know, to talk about Pokemon inspired. Yeah.
I mean, again, there's been a ton of, like, you know, if he's gone to the effort of making these 150 new ones, then just make a game that's a tribute to Pokemon, but doesn't have any Pokemon, and call it, I don't know, Mon Poke or something, and just...
I think sort of around when it started development, like almost a decade ago, it might have been more of a viable idea, just something cool that you make and share around on some forums that you go on and stuff like that. But now when something like this comes out and it gets 1.5 million downloads in a week, like, A, that wouldn't have been possible back then, and it probably would have gone under Nintendo's radar back then. But now it's sort of, you put Pokemon on anything and it's going to be massively known, and Nintendo will know about it immediately and ask them to remove it.
I think, yeah, that's just... the amount of media attention both of these got, like, it's, you know, if everyone had just gone, oh, cool, this is good, don't tell anyone about it.
Yeah.
That they may have done all right. And the other thing is, they're out on the internet.
Mm.
If you want these, you'll be able to find them.
I know that AM2R was up on a whole bunch of mirror sites, which they'd all been taken down, but it's also up in torrent form, and you kind of can't take that down. Once it's out, you can't put the cat back in the bag.
Yeah. Who actually issued the takedown notice for Uranium? Was it Nintendo or Pokemon?
From what I understand, it wasn't actual takedown notice. It was Nintendo's lawyers talked to us or gave us some general hints in a certain direction, and so we decided we're going to pull it down before anything actually happens. Like, I don't think there was any actual legal action.
What is it? Notified of multiple takedown notices from lawyers representing Nintendo of America.
Ah, okay. Well, there you go.
But they weren't personally contacted. It must have been through some sort of proxy.
It's a weird, like, Chinese whispers, please take it down, but we won't directly ask you, which is bizarre.
Probably because there is a bit of a muddy border. Works. Because everyone thinks that Pokemon is a Nintendo IP when it's not.
Yeah.
It's second party, I think, is the best description for it.
Yeah, I haven't heard that word used for a while, but it works.
Because it's a rare one.
It's second party, yet they own part of the company that...
Well, that's kind of what second party is.
Yeah. Actually,
like
how
Factor 5...
Rare,
like, didn't they own Factor 5 or part of Factor 5?
I don't think so.
No? Or at least with Rare, for sure, they did until...
Rare would have been second party.
Yeah.
Is Monolith second or first party?
Oh, they're second now. They're owned by Nintendo. Second. First party is Nintendo themselves. Second party is a company owned by Nintendo, either wholly or partially. And then third party is just entirely independent.
Oh, yes. I guess back on the Pokemon.
yes.
there are some kind of awesome...
Speaking of bizarre Pokemon.
Yeah, there are some cool new Pokemon or old Pokemon. There's Pokemon in the new Sun and Moon that have lived in the Alola region all their life, but they are kind of familiar, but also they are adapted to the Alola lifestyle, and it's kind of great. I really like this idea.
The Marowak one is actually quite clever. It just clicked why I thought it was so cool, because of the whole fire spinning thing.
Yeah. It's like a sort of
that's a very
circus-y
tropical
sort of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, like there's a sort of dark colored sassy Meowth, which is kind of wonderful.
Sassy
Meowth.
Yeah, good point.
He's just
glaring at me with knowing eyes.
Holy shit, the Raichu surfing on its tail.
Yeah. Yes. Oh. It's just like the actual surfing Raichu. Like, remember how you could get Surfing Pikachu in Pokemon Stadium 1? And he could evolve it and he would surf on his tail and it was kind of awesome.
And there was like a card for it and he was in, was there a Surfing Pikachu in Pokemon Snap?
Yes. I think that might be the first one.
Which is coming to the Wii U eShop this week.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Side note. Yeah, that's happening. It's curious. Well, okay. I suspect it will have no, you know, people have been clamoring for the Wii U would be perfect for Pokemon Snap. You could use the gamepad as a camera. No, it's not going to have any of that, I'm sure.
So have you guys looked at the reason why Alola Raichu is different in this region?
Do tell.
So the scientists decided to have a look into it and they asked the locals, why do you think it is like this? And they went, I don't know, it probably ate too many pancakes.
It just became
I'm not joking. That's the description.
The wonderful Pokemon scientists of the Alola region are clearly, you know, they're very committed to their craft.
Oh yeah, this is probably just ate too many pancakes, which is a traditional Hawaiian dish. Apparently,
hurts my head.
I love it.
Speaking of batshit crazy looking ones, though, hello dragon type.
Which.
Buddy Charizard can only become dragon if it gets like a magic stone. Now, yes, let's just give Executor. Let's make him a dragon. Why?
Why not?
Who was asking for that?
Because that's what happens to Pokemon in the Alolan region.
Yes, because when I look at a palm tree, I'm like, that's a dragon.
Yeah.
Although I guess, you know, it's a bit spiky, so.
I do like sort of the whole idea of bringing back Pokemon from earlier generations, but with regional differences. Really, really, I really love the idea. Like, it makes sense that an Exeggutor in a highly sunny region would grow really tall because that's what the Pokedex always said about him. Or, I should say.
Has it been said if you bring like a Ninetales into this game from a previous generation that it's magically going to change into?
No, I think it's Pokemon that you find or evolve. Okay.
Good.
Because, yeah, I mean, good, it's, I think the whole idea is that they adapted and lived in this region before you got there, whereas if you bring one from another place, it, you know, you can't bring a kangaroo to America and it becomes a raccoon.
Which you is don't like, know you that. Know, that's,
well, this is, I mean, let's try for science.
get some pancakes in there, too.
This is...
yes.
This is an interesting way for them to go. Like, you know, they probably are reaching a point where they're like, we're running out of animals to use, guys. What can we do next?
I think
a platypus Pokemon. So, I mean, this is like, you know, well, why don't we just adapt existing ones for different regions? Mm,
exactly. Like, you
know, here's a crocodile, but it's from an ice region. Or,
yeah, like an icy cold Sandshrew, Sandslash. Like it capitalizes on the immense popularity that the first gen still has. And just sort of makes it so that they are unique and they're not exactly the same as they were before. But people who really liked ones, they were like, holy crap, there's an icy Vulpix. I'm personally all over that.
You look at Pokemon Go and it is all just first gen because that's what people remember. I mean, you know, even though like for me, Cyndaquil is one of my favorite Pokemon, I'd guarantee 90% of the people playing Pokemon Go don't give a shit about Cyndaquil.
I think what it could lead to as well is in future generations, you might find other regions had, you know, Hoenn that was? No, that was third gen. Johto, yes. Then you might have Johto Pokemon in a different region that have adapted to their own sort of versions. And it's a way of introducing more Pokemon, as you say, without resorting to more ice cream cones and lampshades. But it, you know, keeps things interesting, makes it kind of fun. I really like the idea.
Yeah, I hope they actually don't just keep it for first gen. Have a couple on second gen as well.
Yeah, definitely. But although that said, I'm completely okay with the sandcastle Pokemon.
It just occurred to me why like Sandshrew and Vulpix would be ice type. Because they're living in a hotter area, so they have to cool down. I don't know.
Maybe.
That's what Sandshrew says, though. He's basically, he's lived in deserts his whole life, and then he's around volcanoes going off, and he's like, that's too warm.
Mate,
and he went to the mountains.
Mate, this is too hot.
Curious.
I'm on the website reading about them, and that's actually what it is.
I got to cool down a bit.
Yeah.
I got to cool down. It's too hot here, mate.
Just become ice.
Oh, my God. I hope there's like an Alola version of Jinx.
Oh, holy moly. Alolan Sandslash, or Sandshrew, slides on its tummy. To slide around when it needs to get around real quick. That's awesome.
Man. Actually, another point with these Alolan types, because they're all first gen, with Pokemon Go, everyone's saying that they should add the 7th gen Pokemon to the game to capitalize on the overlap. That'd be a lot easier with all these Alolan forms.
I have a feeling that's what the next big update is going to be for Pokemon Go. It's like, if you want to advertise your new game coming out soon, because Pokemon Go should be used as a way to advertise the mainline games as well. And it's like, hey, here's a bunch of new Pokemon. If you want to play with them, please check out our new games, Pokemon Sun and Moon, coming in November.
Yeah.
Also, it's just like, that they have, I don't know if it's on normal TV, but when I'm watching Fox at work, there are ads for Pokemon Sun and Moon on TV, and it said, this new Pokemon game, oh, it's so exciting, coming out in November. And I'm like, it's bloody August. Don't advertise games on TV that are coming out in November in August. It's as bad as having Christmas decorations up in September.
You gotta get okay prepared.
I mean, they're capitalizing on Pokemon Go, which, speaking anecdotally, I think has kicked off in Australia bigger than most other places.
Yeah, it's good because we sort of got it first, so it kind of became, you know, a thing that was more popular here than other places. A lot of countries still don't even have it yet, from what I understand.
Catching all those Kangastans, no one else can.
I still haven't got one. What the hell?
I think, I had one out of an egg. I'm so happy.
Just looking through all the Pokemon for 7th generation outside of the Alolan forms, these are actually some really good designs.
Yeah.
Like the Donald Trump weasel.
Well,
oh yes, no, yeah, actually, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
But Mimikyu is really cute, and it's got his backstory.
Oh yeah,
breaks my heart.
Yeah, it's a bit harsh. And then there's this dragon type that actually looks very 70s inspired. Like something out of the Beatles video.
Heck yeah.
I'm actually trying to stay away from like I think it may have been black and white. I went in pretty much blind to the Pokemon that were in it. And I found I enjoyed that a lot just because it's good discovering these new Pokemon when you don't know what they are.
Yeah, I think I did that with Black and White 2, actually, and I remember enjoying that as well. Like, it was, oh, here's this new Pokemon, I'll actually try it, instead of I've already made up my mind about whether I like this Pokemon or not a month ago.
The only things I want to know is I want to know the bloody evolved forms of the starters. I'm like, look, I'm liking Rowlet, but, you know, there's other starters where you've burnt me. Oshawott was really cool, and then look how that thing turned out.
I liked that one.
Piplup. No, they're all stupid, that generation.
It was a samurai.
And then Pip... No. And then Piplup. Oh, adorable little penguin. What the hell is that? It's like an evil...
Did you expect it to stay like a big, adorable penguin? Like,
yes.
That never happens.
I don't know.
Ever.
Blastoise is pretty adorable.
I guess.
What about Chespin? How horrid does that thing look? As it's like bloody Chestnut, buddy.
Well, I mean,
no.
I'm not in the Chespin fan club, I'll admit, but I don't hate it.
I've always been a water starter guy, and then I don't like this Popplio one much.
Yeah.
No one does.
Litten.
But he'll probably be the secretly best-looking bloody final
form. I want to know how they're going to make a cat a fighting type.
Rowlet's going to be like a retarded owl or something.
Well, back on topic of localized forms of things.
Yes.
there's a couple of games that are being localized for English and Australian European
that's
audiences.
Such a smooth transition.
Here's
it would have been if
segments.
You didn't point it out.
You must just go to like clubs and just be like, I'm smooth.
We have jackets just like of how good we are in transitioning things.
Yes.
But yeah.
No editing here, guys.
Yeah, this is just raw.
Good.
We've got the Sega 3D Classics games, like they've been out on the eShop for a while. I think we touched on them on an earlier episode, but yeah, the actual physical cartridge version of that is coming out here, which is kind of exciting.
Looking forward to them releasing a proper cover for it.
Yeah. Like, I really like, for anyone who hasn't seen it, the cover, like, has some really, really awesome Ken Sugimori art on the front, covered up by, like, 17 different, like, logos and stickers all over the place. It's
like
kind of gross.
Batman Arkham City Game of the Year edition all over again.
Legit. That's exactly what it's like. Like, it's got, how many games on there? 10 games. It's got, like, 10 different logos at the top and then just a whole bunch of other logos at the bottom. It's just... I want this just a clean cover. That would be so awesome. I'd put this on my wall if it was a clean cover, I think. It's so nice.
Yeah.
What are the games on it?
There is Sonic the Hedgehog, Thunderblade, Galaxy Force 2, Altered Beast, Power Drift, Puyo Puyo 2, Fantasy Zone 2W, and Fantasy Zone 2. I don't know what they are, but I'm sure someone knows because... Yeah, and Maze Walker.
Fantasy Zone 2 is the Master System version. W is the arcade version.
Ah, well, there we go. Thank you. And Maze Walker.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah, gosh. Sega fan, get out of here.
See if I give a shit. I mean, I'm kind of disappointed with the selection. I mean, I've got it already.
I'm so disappointed that I bought it 6 months ago.
I like Puyo, Puyo Puyo and I like Fantasy Zone. That's cool. That's awesome. But then I'm like, you couldn't have put Streets of Rage on here, or you couldn't have put, I don't know, what's the Afterburner? I think in Japan they got a, what's the
word? Like, haven't they had multiple volumes of it in Japan?
Yeah, and one of them has, why am I blanking, Phantasy Star. And I'm like, I would play the hell out of Phantasy Star on.
Well, I wonder if they'll bring out the other volumes here, or if this is going to kind of be it.
I think someone asked them about Phantasy Star, and they're like, "Yeah, that would require translating."
I see.
No.
That's a bummer. I don't know. I'm not super into any of these games, like Sonic the Hedgehog, because. I mean, I'm the boring person who kind of likes Sonic games, but even Sonic 1, I'm not a huge fan of. and I've already got the 3D Classics version digitally anyway. And the others I don't really have any nostalgic connection to beyond Puyo Puyo, but I can play that in so many other forms that I don't really feel like buying it this way.
It's a pretty nice collection of games.
It is. I mean, like, for someone who grew up on Sega, it would be amazing, but that's just not me.
The only Sega classic I want remastered and re-released is Jet Set Radio Future, so I've got nothing.
just stay on that wagon. It'll happen eventually.
I'm on here.
All by your lonesome.
Coming soon to the NX.
If that were a launch title. Oh. Sorry, I'm getting distracted.
Getting all hot and
that's
flustered.
That's my job.
Speaking of your job, because it's a thing that you like, the new Yo-Kai games are also being localized. Woo! Something about fleshiness. Please tell me why it's a fleshy game.
What are the titles? So the first Yo-Kai Watch was just one game, and then, as with all of these monster collecting games do, they're like, Pokemon can have more than one version, so can we. So the versions are, while I drastically quickly try and scroll to it, and it's not on the first page, you son of a bitch.
I thought you were a Yo-Kai person, man.
He's a no-kai person.
I'm more of a Monster Rancher person, sorry.
Monster Rancher is great. Let's have a Monster Rancher podcast. I'll talk for days.
Really? Okay. why isn't it? I can't find it at all. Where is it?
Isn't it like Bony Something and Fleshy Spirits?
Yeah, there's souls? Stupid names.
Yes. Bony yes. Spirits and Fleshy Souls.
Yeah.
And it's coming to Australia on October 15th, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, found it, third page. Look, I'm looking forward to it. I really enjoy it. I mean, I enjoyed the first game, that there were some problems. Like, I found the combat, for me, a bit hands-off. I know Troy has
other opinions.
And then I just found, the big problem I had was actually recruiting the yokai. I found that took too much effort. Like you'd actually have to go walking around searching for a yokai, then you battle it, and then there's no guarantee you'll befriend it anyway.
Did it bother you enough that you're not... Yeah, go on.
Did the original Yo-Kai Watch in Japan have two versions, or was that also single version?
Just the one.
Okay.
And, I mean, I've heard this is a lot better. I enjoyed Yo-Kai Watch more for just the world it built. Like, Pokemon's this huge, grand, you know, country-spanning adventure, whereas this is... You're just in a town, just going out, doing kid stuff, having fun little adventures, and I like that. And it's an absolute gorgeous game. Like, it, you know, craps all over Pokemon.
It's a lot more story than Pokemon.
Yeah.
Were you bothered enough by the first one that you're not excited for the second one, or are you still all in on it?
Son, I've already got it pre-ordered.
Oh, I'm not your child.
Like two versions thing. Is it going to be different yokai in each version?
Yeah.
So trading. Did the first one have trading? I have not played enough Yo-Kai Watch to really know.
I think it did. It also had local battles. The sequel, I'm fairly sure this has online battles.
Okay, cool.
I'm actually sort of upset that this gets a sequel, and they haven't said anything about the sequel to LBX, because I actually enjoyed LBX Line Battlers Experience, whatever it's called, also by Level 5. I enjoyed that more than Yo-Kai Watch, but... I don't think that's sold enough for them to go.
Doesn't have the brand, man.
Sequel.
Level 5 definitely tried to do something different with the whole collecting familiars thing than a lot of other developers try. Because, what was that, Ni No Kuni on PS3?
Yeah, that had very similar elements.
Yeah, I really liked that too.
It was made by Level 5 as well, so.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, like Level 5 tried to do something
different. It's what they do with all their games. Like, you look at... what's it called? Inazuma 11. And that's basically, you're not collecting monsters, you're collecting soccer players for your team.
Exactly.
And then it's a whole cross-media experience with a TV show and manga and all this. The same for Yo-Kai Watch and same for LBX. Like, that's got a cartoon that's been on TV. I think the next one, Snack World and all of that. That they, outside of Layton, which got a movie, they really do push... Here's a game, here's a cartoon, here's a manga.
Multimedia project is usually the label I see. Yes. Like Pokemon was...
Transmedia experience.
That,
well, it's, you know,
that sounds like a train.
It's them trying to copy Pokemon.
Trains media experience.
It's the transmedia. Media is a country.
Like Transperth.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see if Yo-Kai Watch 3 comes out, because that's only just come out in America, in Japan, but, you know, we sort of are late 3DS. Like, I can't see it getting another year or two of games from what we're getting now.
Because I think Yo-Kai Watch is actually a lot more popular than anyone anticipated. And if you remember with DS, they got like Pokemon games well into the 3DS's lifespan.
Yeah, but I mean, how much of Yo-Kai Watch's popularity was the marketing? Like, they really went hard on that. They but a lot harder than they have for other companies' games that they've published.
I feel like attributing success to marketing only really is relevant at the start. If it stays popular, then it's the product itself.
I mean, and I go to EB Games and they still have like Yo-Kai Watch merchandise in there, so
yeah.
Well, that seems like as good a point as any to finish on the news. So we'll go to a quick break and we'll come back with a couple of games that some of us have been playing. And we are back. So yeah, we're jumping back to talk about some games we've been playing. We missed it last time because there wasn't a hell of a lot to talk about, I don't think. But now there is a little bit. Yeah, there's a little bit to talk about now. And so Daniel and Troy kind of have been playing Monster Hunter Generations. So that's a thing. What should we say about that?
Well, so like, I've always wanted to get into Monster Hunter, but I've just sort of like, I think this is actually the sixth Monster Hunter game I've bought, and you know, I've not really gotten into them before. I when I got my PSP Go, because I was one of those people.
Hey, I was one of those people too.
I know, but I've got like, one of the first games I bought for it was Freedom Unite,
yep,
or something. But I just didn't. I know, I played a few minutes of, oh, this is cool. Can't wait to get into it. And then just never got around to it. And then I picked up Try when that came out on the Wii. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. Can't wait to get into it. And then I just never played it. And then I got 3 Ultimate and I played probably 10, 15 hours of it. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'm enjoying this. But hey, I'm going to go finish off Castlevania Lords of Shadow, Mirrors of Fate. Because
that was a great idea.
I like that game, though.
That game's bad. Anyway.
Oh, we need to do a VCR on that.
Yeah, actually. Anyway.
Halloween. Sorry, just shopping ideas. and then, you know, 4, I probably hardly even played like 2 or 3 hours of that. So game number 6, I'm like, you know, I've spent several $100 on this series. Stuff it. I'm getting into it. I'm forcing myself to. I'm playing it. And I'm probably about 35 hours into Generations so far, and I'm only just up to the 4-star quests, which is where, you know, instead of just fighting one big monster, now you've got 2 big monsters, and it's like, yay, there's more big giant frog things chasing me. This is great.
Would you say that 6th time is the charm, as it finally kind of, do you kind of get why people like it now?
I do, look, I've always sort of from a distance understood why people like it. Like, you like watching footage of it, and you know, it seems to be a game that's all about big boss battles.
Yeah.
It's like you're hunting these giant creatures, and it's just, it's basic old school gameplay, like watching the tells, attacking when you can, going for the weak point. There's one that's a giant enemy crab, and if you hit the weak point,
is massive a giant damage. Enemy crab, though.
It's a giant enemy everything, so, really.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes.
They should just call it Giant Enemy Generations.
Yeah, Giant Enemy.
And
no plural.
Like Generations isn't so much a new game. Like, it sort of is continuing the groundwork that 4 set. But it, from what I'm aware, it goes back to a lot of the old areas, and it's sort of like a celebration of the series.
Yeah, I guess with a name like Generations, that makes sense. Like, it's definitely not unprecedented for them to do multiple iterations of each game. Like, you had Try and 3 Ultimate and 4 and 4 Ultimate. Like, this doesn't seem like a 4 Ultimate Ultimate. It just seems more like a, this is the best of everything Monster Hunter has had up until this point. Here you go, from what I understand anyway.
It's like the Super Smash Brothers of Monster Hunter. Like, it's a celebration kinda, of all the past games.
In that way, yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
It sort of pays homage to, like, the Freedom Unite and all of that, I think. I don't know why this one's clicked with me more than 4, because 4 looked really cool, and like, I wanted to, like, get into that using the Charge Blade. But just something about this, it's maybe it's just because I've committed myself to actually, like, learning the weapons, which I think is the hard thing. Like, you just start off, and it throws a lot of stuff at you very quickly, and it doesn't really tell you, oh, this is how you do that, and this is how you do that.
Like, yeah, it definitely, the only times I've been able to really enjoy it is when I've had somewhat of a mentor to kind of show me the ropes a little bit. I think you kind of need it for these games.
I mean, I haven't so much had that, but I have this. I don't know if anyone watches or listens to the 8-4 Play podcast.
I'm aware of their work.
8-4. Yeah, so they're a bunch of guys from Japan who do video game localization, and one of the regulars on it, he has a YouTube channel called Gaijin Hunter, and he just does tutorials on this is how this weapon works, and this is how you do this. And so I've started. I went in trying to use the Charge Blade, and like, wasn't really getting it, so I started watching some of his videos and then just trying out some weapons. And then as I'm trying out the weapons, I go back and rewatch the videos, and I'm actually stuff starting to finally click, like how to use the weapon.
So really, you were like studying the game until you got it.
Yeah, and
like not in a bad way. You need
to study. Yeah, but no, it's not. But it really is a game you need to. I think you need to find a weapon that works for you and then just hammer in on using that and figuring out what works.
Emphasis on hammer, because hammer's the best.
Clearly, yeah, you found your weapon.
That's what I'm using at the moment.
I love the hammer.
I really wanted to use the Charge Blade. And the Charge Blade it's a sword and shield, but then you can transform into a giant two-handed axe, which is awesome. But it's sort of a bit of a clumsy, clunky weapon to use. And then I tried using the hammer and I wasn't really getting that. But then I found, I went to the longsword, which is like a big sort of Sephiroth style sword from Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
You know, it's not slow, but it's not really fast like the dual blades, but I found using that. And then the other combination is Monster Hunter Generation brings in new fighting styles. So before, like Troy could probably describe, how would you describe the game style in like 4?
It's vertical.
It's very sort of, yeah. Whereas this, it introduces the hunting styles, which can change the way you play. So there's like the normal guild style, which is the normal Monster Hunter style. There's striker, which I don't really, I think it's just a more aggressive sort of style of fighting. There's aerial, which is the one I'm using. The way aerial works is if you can dodge into an enemy and then you'll leap up into the air and can do a flying attack, which makes things a bit more dynamic and actiony. And I think that's what's really drawn me into it. Just how it feels a bit more actiony and exciting and like.
It's basically a game without animation cancelling as well. So once you attack, you're committed.
So with doing this, I dodge into an enemy and I fly in the air, and then I can sort of reposition myself to come flying down them. So in the act of dodging their attack, I can also get ready to attack them. And the other style is Adept, which is about countering. So you're dodging attack the minute they're about to hit you, and you'll do an attack to them.
Very Bayonetta sounding.
Yeah, I think. I don't know. It's a lot to take in, and it's sort of all hard to explain, but. Well, like, you know, after getting into it, like learning these weapons, and then I think I reached a point about, you know, maybe 10 hours in once I've sort of gotten to this, I think I just beat this giant frog thing. I have no idea what the name of it is. But once I beat that, it just sort of all clicked, because these fights can take like upwards of 30 minutes sometimes, and it's just that. It really is hunting them. Like, you will find where they're located in the area, then you'll mark it, and then you'll fight it. You'll run away, so you have to chase it, pursue it. You can damage them to, like, break off certain parts of their body so they'll be weaker or act differently, and then after all of that, you finally take it down and it's like, yes, I am amazing. I have defeated this giant thing.
It's the best feeling.
I will now.
Yeah, that was totally like the thing that once I worked out what was going on when I think I was playing probably Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, the one that was on Wii U. Like when I sort of noticed that enemies, they don't have a health bar, which was initially like, what's going on? But then you realize that you start to see their condition play out in how they actually move and act. They, like the when limp. You get them, yeah, you they'll start limping and they'll start getting, some of them will start getting desperate when they're cornered, like when they're on in a desperate situation, they'll lash out more than they would have otherwise. And I thought that was a really, really cool way of presenting the kind of information you need to know for game purposes without it being some artificial health bar or anything. It was really, really cool when I saw that.
And I don't know, it's just something about it's really sort of clicked for me and I'm enjoying it. It's just like now it's every morning on the train. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get a quest or two done. And then between my breaks at work, it's all of this. And then, you know, as you kill monsters and gather resources in the area, you can use that to make better weapons and better armor, which you can use to take down bigger monsters. And it's just this sort of, like, there's no leveling up, but you're just making better gear. Mm.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm sort of, yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I sort of want to get more people to play with it because I can sort of see, like, that's the bit I've not tried yet, the multiplayer. And I can see, you know, if you're working with a group of friends and I just, you're all sort of talking over online.
Like Discord, the Vox official Discord channel.
and coordinating attacks and just working together as a team. I can see a big appeal in that.
Yeah, I think that sort of thing. Though, I mean, I've played a little bit on the Wii U, not enough to really know much about the, was it 3 Ultimate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'd prefer Monster Hunter on a home console rather than a handheld.
I think I would prefer it, as heretical as it is to say, I'd prefer it on a Vita, purely because of the nicer screen and an actual second analog stick and not a nub that stops working when your hand gets sweaty.
I found the nub works quite well though.
I've tried to go back and play like without the nub, and it was I could not play Monster Hunter without the second analog stick. But
it's more that Monster Hunter just feels like a, you know, you sit down and you commit time to playing it, and I'd rather do that on a console than a handheld.
Though that said, if you can find time to do it on like the train on the way to work or in however long your breaks are at work, like. I guess it must work in sort of 15-minute chunks as well.
Yeah, it can. I mean, it's whatever you sort of, you know, there are missions that will take, you know, half an hour or more to finish, whereas there are ones like, oh, you just got to go gather out and get 10 mushrooms and you'll be done.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they all get you XP and various loot. But, I mean, sort of what you're saying, Stephen and Troy, is, well, if the NX is a hybrid system, hey, here's a perfect game for launch.
Legit, yeah, like you can play it either way you want.
This is the thing, like this isn't, you know, this isn't a brand new entry. This is sort of like a best of compilation. I could easily see Capcom going, and Monster Hunter 5 is on the NX at launch, everyone. And then Japan's like, oh my God, boom.
Done.
Gone. Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
So.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Closing remarks.
I'm really enjoying it. I'm glad the series is sort of seeing it's finally hitting in the West.
Yeah, I guess it probably helps that it's on a thing that's not a PSP. As much as I would prefer it on the Vita, it probably would have sold nowhere near as much.
Also, I mean, I kind of like it on playing it on a dual screen because the way I've got my interface set up, I've got nothing on my HUD on the top screen. It's just like clear gameplay only.
Yeah.
And then on the bottom screen, I've got all my, you know, like health bars, my palicos, which, I love, you know, I'm going to miss dual screen gaming because I love just having the bottom screen is like, that's where all my interface and fiddly bits are. And then the top screen's just pure action. And, you know, now we're going to go back to, oh, no, you've got to have a HUD cluttering everything up and yay.
Cool. Well,
so, yeah.
Well, that's the games we've been playing. So, yeah, I guess we'll go to another. That is the game that one of us has been playing. So we'll go to another quick break and come back to finish it all up. now we are back. So we're just going to finish everything off as we always do in the post-break final bit. So on the site, we've had a couple of things going on. There's lots of little, you know, Pokemon and NXT news. We don't report on every rumor, but some rumors that are kind of interesting, they go up. It's fine. Got a couple of reviews up on the site. We've got the Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens review up now, and hopefully a Sonic Mario and Sonic at the Rio Olympic Games for Wii U review is also going to go up fairly soon, because I have to write that, and I'll do that very quickly. Let's see. If you want to see any more, we're at Vooks.net, VOOKS.net.
Vooks.net, and get some fuss and chops.
We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, mostly all just at VOOKS.net. Daniel, have you got any interesting things you wanted to plug, Vooks or otherwise?
You can watch my existing episodes of Touching Is Good. New one coming one day. I just need to finish Dragon Quest VI and then Monsters 2. They're a little bit of a drag, but I'm getting there slowly but surely.
One day.
And you could follow me on Twitter for all my "Here's the crap I've bought this weekend" tweets, which is Wortintendo, Wortintendo.
Is that right?
Think so.
We'll put it in the show notes just in case.
Yeah.
And Troy, anything to plug, Vooks or otherwise?
I do have a kind of project that I've been working on. Hopefully that'll be up soon. Hopefully this week. I don't want to reveal too much about that to get people's hopes up and then crush them. Other than that, I'm making stupid Photoshops of whenever they announce new Pokemon.
Yes.
So.
That's reason enough to follow Troy on Twitter.
Yeah, Photoshop is my game. At Stew Review.
As for me, I do the podcasts and I write on Vooks sometimes. And if you want to follow me on any of the social medias that the kids are on these days, at Stephen Ibsen, because that's my name.
Wear it out.
I mean, follow it all you want.
But yeah, but don't wear it out.
I guess. And where do I go from here?
That's
probably.
What's your MySpace page?
Oh, good Lord. Dead. So, yeah, clearly that's all that we have to talk about this episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next time, probably in about a fortnight's time. And hope you have a good time. Until then, goodbye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.